That's what all the people say. You're riding high in April, shot down in May.
Our next guest on the program was with us just 1 week ago, but we had such a wonderful time talking with him. We invited him back for a second round, and he was kind enough to agree to come on back with us. He is the author with Ron Borges of a fabulous new book, Present at the Creation, My Life in the NFL and the Rise of America's Game. Upton Bell back with us. Upton, thanks for being with us again.
Pleasure. Quick story. I'm just listening to Sinatra. My second year at the Patriots, I get a letter from Sinatra. Upton, I'd like a Patriots jersey. At that moment, we hadn't won a game. So I told the woman who was handling the mail right back, very honored, Frank, but why the hell would you want our jersey? and that was it. Actually, I met Sinatra a couple of times. Fascinating person, but not as fascinating as Stephen King. There is nobody more fascinating than him.
But that's why we played that Sinatra song as a lead into the Sinatra story, but you didn't need any more setup than Frank himself.
Are you kidding me? Life's nothing but a stand-up act.
Well, let's talk about the owner of our station, Stephen King, and you know him quite well. I've worked with him a lot through the years, and you've got some very interesting stories about him.
Well, the first time, it's ironic, 1990, that I met Stephen, I just finished doing an interview with George Herbert Walker Bush at the White House, and I said to Bob Lobel and the people at Channel 4, I said, you know, the most fascinating person is not the president, it's Stephen King. And I said, I have this idea. I said, I've never talked to him before, but I'll call Marcia, and I assume that Marcia is still with Stephen. And
yes.
I said, I will propose this. Now, remember, the Red Sox had broken hearts in New England for many years, so I pitched it to Marcia. I said, here's what I'd like to do. Stephen is going to be in Boston. He's going to go to the game tonight that will determine, I believe, whether the Red Sox make it into the playoffs that year. I said, what I'd like to do, he was staying at the Boston Harbor Hotels, take a camera crew over there, and interview him and base it on the story of Moby Dick, the search for the great white whale. And he loved the idea. And so I said, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to interview him, basing the Red Sox being Moby Dick, the great whale. And of course, Ahab is we, the stupid fans. So we did the interview, and it was absolutely great. He came to the game that night, and actually we showed him on the monitor down on the field the introduction and the interview, and then we went up into the WBZ private box. And here's something that your audience might not know about Stephen. He said, here are the ground rules. He said, when the inning is taking place, I don't talk about anything. The only time that I will discuss anything with you, and he said, I'm open to anything, is between the innings. So you know, the Red Sox would bat, and then you know, you wait for 4 or 5 minutes till the next team came up. I think they were playing the White Sox, or it might have been Toronto. So you had about 5 minutes each time in between each inning to talk to them. I said, this is really hilarious. So between each inning, as we worked our way up to the ninth inning, I was telling him, I said, Red Sox, they're lousy. They shouldn't be in the playoffs. And I listed a whole bunch of reasons why. I said, the right fielder stinks. He isn't the same as Dwight Evans, so on and so forth. So at the end of the game, the Red Sox did pull it out with a very dramatic catch in right field. And with that, you know, Stephen was with his driver. And he said, I'm going home. And he said, I'll see you sometime. I swear to God, one day later, a book arrives here, The Dark Self. And with it, and I have it right up on the wall here, framed, everything that I said to him that was wrong, he repeated back to me in this letter. You said they weren't going to go anywhere. Here's what they did. You said the right fielder wasn't going to do this. Here's what he did. And went line by line. Now, you think about the memory of somebody, because it was just casual conversation, and I was having a great time with it. But he had a letter. He sent it to me directly the next day, and every one of the things I said, he remembered, and then he said, this is the alternative to it. It's really amazing. I said, I've had that since 1990, so we're talking about 27 years. And many times he would, when I would be doing a football show, the Super Bowl one year, I called and I said, would you please get us off the hook? I have to do 5 hours. And he came on and just was terrific. Not only talking about baseball, but talking about anything. And ironically, he ran into Dan Shaughnessy. And at that time, I was doing a show called Sports Beat with Bob Ryan, Bob Lobel, and Joe Fitzgerald. And it was the biggest TV show of its time, a forerunner of all of the things you see today.
Right.
So King said to Shaughnessy, he said, yeah, I've been watching Upton Bell, he said, now a lot. And he said, you know, he reminds me of Ted Bundy. I said, Jesus, what a compliment. But that, you know, that was Stephen King. Last time I saw him in person, God, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago, he was appearing with a band that went around the country. I know one of a band of authors. One of them was Amy Tan, is a very, very famous.
Dave Barry, the writer. Rock Bottom Remainders.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I have to tell you, fellas, I've never heard worse music in my life, but... The participants were so colorful and so good. I'm trying to remember the instrument Stephen played, and I went back
guitar
backstage. Yes, afterwards, and of course you can't tell somebody what the hell was that I just heard. But it was really great. I mean, just listening to all of these famous authors and Stephen and their band. And I don't know how long they had the band. What, a year, 2 years, something like that. They would make appearances here and there, but they sold out. I'm trying to remember the venue here in Boston.
Yeah, and
they sold it out immediately because everybody wanted to see Stephen King and this band perform. So there's some of the stories about him. And you know, it's interesting because if I'm sitting here and the Shawshank Redemption is on, I must have seen it 40 times. And think about a prolific writer who has written not only great books with incredible characters, but practically every one of them were made into the movie. So I'm sitting here one night, somebody called me and said, have you seen Stephen King's new movie, TV movie, Storm of the Century? I said, no. I said, if I knew it was on, you know, because I watch anything that he puts on there. And he said, well, you're the sheriff in the movie. I said, you've got to be kidding.
That's right.
He said, no. He said, Upton Bell is the sheriff. He said, you're probably going to look like what he looks like. He's kind of fat and balding. And I think the sheriff was always cheating with somebody in the town. And I said, that's my man, Stephen.
Well, you know.
So I actually got the book, and I got him to sign the, you know, he wrote the companion book to the movie, and I got him to sign it along with The Dark Self. But you know what? On my deathbed, I'm going to be saying, remember that fat ball sheriff. as I go into the next life, if there is one, I want to be the storm of the century. That's it.
Well, one of the most remarkable things about the book are all the people that you have met. And it struck me as I was reading the epilogue, that you actually sat in the Athletics dugout in Philadelphia with Connie Mack and saw Joe DiMaggio, Bob Feller, as you mentioned, Robinson, Willie Mays, the guy you thought was the greatest player of all time. Do you feel like you have really bridged two or three generations of important sports figures?
Well, it's not only important sports figures. Remember, in the book, and I hope people will get the book and really read the history. Because, gentlemen, it's the history of this country. Remember, my mother was one of the most famous actresses in America. In fact, if your audience goes online and types in Frances Upton and types in one of the first talking movies ever made, Night Work, you'll see my mother at the age of 24 dancing in the movie. She knew Lindbergh. She knew all of the great people of the century. As you read in the epilogue, you know, she ends up going to a dinner with Al Capone and Machine Gun Ned McGurn, and wonders why all of the people that are in show business are backs are to the opening of the door, and why the gangsters are all with their backs to the wall. And she's asking Capone, "Oh, Mr. Capone, why are we sitting on this side?" Of course, he just smiles and blows cigar smoke in her face. But she, in some ways, actually was the reason the NFL is around today. And I'll tell you why. First of all, Bert Bell invented the draft, and if he had not, that probably wouldn't have been. But she's the one that convinced my father, who was a great quarterback at Penn, and then went on to coach in college football. His father owned all sorts of hotels and things. He was the Trump of Philadelphia without being Trump, thank God. He met her at a party in New York, and I believe that Lindbergh was at the party. And he began to pursue her over 2 or 3 years. And at that time, she was engaged to Bernard Baruch, the famous financier's son. And she broke the engagement and convinced my father to basically, she said, the pro game's it. She said, "Have you seen the Galloping Ghost? Have you seen Red Grange? Have you seen the Monsters of the Midway, George Halas?" And so they began to date, and they went to the pro games, and eventually, make a long story short, they secretly got married. Walter Winchell, the famous gossip columnist of the time, broke the news. They got married on the church steps in Philadelphia. She gave him $2,200. They went down to the bankruptcy court in Philadelphia, bought the Frankfurt Yellow Jackets with her money. On their way back, they saw the National Recovery Act Eagle up on a big sign, and he said, "That's going to be the name of the team," and that's where it all started. They end up living in his father's hotel, and I actually was born and lived in that hotel, the Ritz-Carlton in Philadelphia, which is in a segment of the NFL this year when they celebrated the anniversary of Bert Bell inventing the draft. So there are... You can't believe how many women have came up to me and said, "Geez, I thought it was, you know, a football book and about the country," but they never realized what an important role Frances Upton played in the NFL and its future.
We're talking with Upton Bell. His book with Ron Borges, Present at the Creation, My Life in the NFL and the Rise of America's Game. We would be remiss not to mention the horrific accident that you were in not all that long ago, and recovery from that continues. And is it safe to say that you walked your way back to good health?
Well, I would like to tell, again, your audience, the first thing is I never would have survived the first night if I wasn't in good shape. And I've worked out practically every day my whole life. At the time, I had broken my neck in 2 places, fractured my spine in 39 places, broke all my ribs, and had a severe concussion. And the doctors wanted to operate, but then they said, you know, he could die on the table. So I lived, and for 6 months, I was in a rehab place, and finally when I got out, I was, and this is the lesson about the opioid scandal and crisis, I was taking 100 micrograms directly into my skin of fentanyl, which is the most deadly drug you can take. But I had to take it because the pain was so severe. There's nothing they can do when you've crushed your body like that. So what I began to do was, in the hospital, walk as much as I could, as much as I could stand. And then when I got home, you have to come down off to 100 micrograms over 3 months, because if you try to come down too quickly, you're either going to be a drug addict, or if you come down, it's very severe. You're very sick every day. There's a lot of things going on. So I decided that every time that I was in pain or sick, I would get up and go out and walk the back streets and the places I could find. And I found that if I walked 3 hours, it would give me 3 hours of relief from the severe pain. So they sent me to a pain clinic at the Mass General Hospital. And they are now studying the whole idea that to get off drugs that if you're willing to exercise a certain amount, it's almost the same endorphins that are in drugs that you use that can help you do it. But the final thing, a gentleman that really helped me was they sent me to see, ready for this, a Buddhist monk. And the Buddhist monk said, and this really struck home with me, he said, the minute you realize that there's certain parts of your body that will never get better, that will be the moment that you will begin to really heal. And he's absolutely right. You know, we can't be dreamers about certain things in life. We see it in athletics. We see it everywhere. Whether it's a broken body or a broken mind, if you look at something and say, all right, this is what I can live with, this is what I can do, but basically these are parts of me that are never going to recover, it's a positive message. And that's when I really began to get a lot better.
You know, Bert, we talked last week about the 1958 championship game, and I just happened to get a new book called Replays, Rivalries, and Rumbles by Steve Geitschire, which has a great article in it on that game by Dick Crepeau, who's a good friend of the show and longtime longtime SLA member. And he said something in here that I think was really interesting, and it not only supports what you said, but it says, what really made football was not just that was a game, because as a game, it wasn't that great a game. It was a great thing to happen, but that your father understood that when that game got on television, and television and then later Sports Illustrated paying attention to pro football, that made all the difference in the world. The game itself, how it came out, how it got played out, didn't make as much difference as the fact that an exciting overtime game was on TV, and it was your father who pushed the other player, the other owners, to want to be on television.
Well, actually, a whole book, what's his name, who wrote Black Hawk Down, the famous author, has written a book, it's about 15 years old, and he calls it the greatest game ever played. In fact, he just wrote another book called Way, about the Vietnam battle that kind of settled that war in some ways. And he spends the whole beginning of the book talking about Burt Bell and the contributions he made, in particular not only the draft and many other things, but he's the one that fought the owners on two areas. One, you know, the NFL was going to close down during the Second World War. And my father said, as one of the owners at that time, he said, I'm going to tell you, if we close down, we'll never open again. So you better make up your mind now. If you close it, it's all over. That was the first thing. The second thing he pushed through later on is he said, in those days, the All-Star game was the biggest thing in football. When the champions of the NFL played the college All-Star game in Chicago, because I was at one of the first games, you had near 100,000 people at Soldiers Field. And so he said to the owners, you know, what happens if the game ends up in a tie? What are we going to do, flip a coin to send whatever team wins? He said that would make our league look ridiculous. He said, let's put in a sudden death overtime. He said, it'll add to the drama of the game. And see, he understood television even back in the 40s and early 50s, said that he felt that the most perfect TV game, because of the timeouts, the pace of the game, that it was made for TV. So when that came in 1958, you're absolutely right. The game, it looked like the Colts were going to run away with it. And then there was a fumble before the end of the first half, or it would have been 17-3. But the idea that at that time, that game, and that overtime. In fact, the Giant players didn't know what overtime was.
They didn't know what to do.
Okay, it's a tie, the game ends, and that's it. And that's where you'll see, if you see the old films of the game, is and there's a great shot of Unitas coming out as one of the captains and the Giants captains. And of course, the other thing that helped is that they were going to start the overtime. But the NBC, I think it was NBC, their plug or something happened. Some people think it was pulled on purpose. And there was a long delay. And then as they're about to start the overtime, it comes back on your TV screens again. But if that game didn't occur at that time, baseball would have been, it would have taken another 10 years, maybe never, for the NFL to achieve that fame. So It is also a lesson, like reading a Stephen King book in some ways. One act, one murder, one sentence changes everything. That one game saved and changed the NFL. But if you knew, and of course people wouldn't know, if you knew Bert Bell, he had one of those brilliant minds, and yet he talked out of the side of his mouth, and you'd say, who the hell is this Doc Walliper? But it was amazing. I was there, and again, here's the kind of ironies of life. I had gone to many of the championship games as a kid, and my father had called me and said, are you coming up for the game? And I said, I don't know. I said, is Joe DiMaggio going to be there? And he said, well, I think so. I said, okay, I'm coming. That's the only reason I went to the greatest game ever played and sat there on the 50-yard line and watched this drama unfold. So all of those things, and remember, which is a lot different than today, there was a newspaper strike in New York, so there was no advanced publicity. It was just, another championship game. The Colts playing the Giants in New York, it was big because it was New York and it was Yankee Stadium. But there was a total newspaper strike, so this had to rely on television. And, of course, had one of the great endings, and the game saved everything in history.
Upton Bell with Ron Borges, the author, is a present at the creation. It is an absolutely wonderful book. It's been a delight for us to chat with you again this week, sir. We appreciate you making time for us, and hope you and your family have a wonderful holiday season, and we hope to do it again before too long.
Thank you very much. I'll see you at Shawshank Prison.